Today, I'm going to be talking about factors associated with immunization information system participation among rural providers in Oregon, successes with VFC, challenges, and more opportunities. Little is known about practice barriers to immunization among U.S. clinicians serving children in large rural western areas, including Oregon. Oregon is predominantly a rural state. In 2000, we had three cities with populations of greater than 100,000 and nearly 200 towns with populations less than 10,000 inhabitants, and including 145 with less than 2,500 inhabitants. So about 36% of Oregonians live in rural Oregon. Now, what we call rural in Oregon is very geographically diverse, and those span the western coast, the central mountainous regions, and immense eastern high desert lands. This was a partnership project, and our partner organization was the Oregon Rural Practice-Based Research Network. And let me tell you a little bit about them. ORPRIN was founded in 2002. It's all rural. It includes all rural practices, including 144 clinicians, 43 practices in 35 communities, so around over 225,000 patients are served by those clinicians. And you can see on the map here, the yellow with the black cross are member clinics, and they're spread all over rural Oregon. And we're going to be talking about phase two clinics in the practice, and those are highlighted with the pink squares. So say a little bit on the north side. So the Rural Oregon Immunization Initiative is a collaboration between ORPRIN, who I just told you about, and the immunization program at the State Health Department. And recently, we've received funding and support from CDC's Health Services Research and Evaluation Branch with the National Center of Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. And we've had other sources of funding, including immunization money from the state's immunization grant. In terms of methods, we have three phases for the project, and we're actually in the middle of phase three. Phase one included a quantitative statewide survey of primary care clinicians regarding current practices and barriers to immunization delivery. Phase two included a mixed methods assessment of 11 practices, including chart reviews, observations, interviews with clinicians, separate interviews with clinic staff, parents, and county health department officers. And we just completed obtaining feedback about phase two and phase one findings with those practices. And eventually, we're hoping to develop and implement practice-specific interventions using a participatory approach. And one of my colleagues is here. He's going to be talking today at 2 o'clock about where we're at with that. So in late 2004, early 2005, we surveyed all licensed rural Oregon clinicians providing care for children from 0 to 3. For this talk, we're going to be focusing on assessing rural Oregon clinicians' participation with the statewide registry called ALERT, our Immunization Information System, IIS, and to identify factors associated with non-participation in ALERT, and to expand our understanding of ALERT use using the qualitative phase two and phase three information. For the survey, we attempted to contact all 1,158 licensed rural clinicians using Oregon's Board of Medical Examiners mailing list and ORPRIN's database, and we supplemented those lists with phone directory and other lists. We initially sent a 46-question survey electronically via email or by mail, and then we followed that up with a reminder card to everybody, and then sent U.S. priority mailings and then telephone calls to non-responders. And the phone follow-up mostly was used to determine non-respondent eligibility. So eligible clinicians were those who provided primary care, who currently at that time see child patients of the age group of interest, 0 to 36 months of age, and still practice in rural Oregon. So, for example, we excluded emergency department clinicians from the analyses. For this talk, we conducted in-depth analyses to examine factors associated with alert participation using chi-square tests to compare percent clinician characteristics and survey answers by alert participation responses, and calculated relative risk estimates using unadjusted and then adjusted odds ratios based on multiple logistic regression using SAS. So that's all the nerdy stuff. For phase two and phase three methods, our qualitative analysis, our goal was to integrate, and it still is, to integrate phase one and phase two and phase three feedback findings. So we've approached our qualitative analysis to develop thematic summaries of data, and then compared these themes with survey findings to identify disconnects between data sets and opportunities to for further exploration. Now, for the survey, our initial unadjusted response rate was 58%. Initially, we had 487 respondents who were eligible, 102 who were ineligible respondents, 280 who were known ineligibles, and 289 had unknown eligibility. And we initially had around 450 records, and then after further looking for exclusions, we have around 415 records that were analyzed, and two recently were excluded. So this is the frequency distribution for clinicians years in practice in that community, and you can see that about 40% of clinicians have been in that community for over 11 years, and about 50% or so have been in their practice community for about 10 years or less. In terms of the settings where the clinicians practice, 19% were in solo practice, 40% were sharing the practice with two to four clinicians, and another 41% were in practices with five or more clinicians. Most of the clinicians are physician or doctors of osteopathy, 67%, 22% were nurse practitioners, and 10% were PAs. And most practiced family medicine, 82%, with 15% practicing pediatrics and the remainder practicing in general practice. We were a little bit surprised. 91% of respondents told us that they had some type of internet access in their practice. And around 20% or more actually were using electronic medical records. 14% were using them exclusively. And we asked about whether they provide immunizations for all patients, some patients, or no patients. And you can see that 18% said that they were not providing in their practice immunizations to any patient. They were referring them out. And 43% said that they provided immunizations for some patients, and another approximately 40% said they provided for all patients immunizations. So we're going to now focus on the clinicians who said that they provided some type of vaccinations, either some or all of the vaccinations. 82% offered vaccine-only visits. 80% participated in VFC, and 69% said that they were willing to give shots, all the shots that were indicated. That means that around 30% or so said that they would not be willing to do that. 56% said that they screened for immunizations during all visits. 38% said that they screened during chronic visits, and 27% said they said that they screened during acute visits. 61% said that they had some way to identify under-immunized children, and 34% said that they had done some type of population review of immunization status, such as AFIX. 85% said that they tracked immunizations using paper charts, and 71% submitted data to alert. Now, this is going to be one of our outcome variables that we're going to look at with modeling. Another way of participating with ALERT is to access, sign up, and receive access to the data. And you don't have to be submitting data to the system to sign up to get access. 66% said that they did that. Among those 66%, 41% said that they used ALERT for every or most child visits. And 48% of the clinicians used some type of mail or telephone immunization reminder. In terms of attitudes about computerized immunization systems, you can see that the percentages are very high for agreeing that these systems streamline immunization delivery, 82%, simplify reminder recalls, 87%, increase immunization coverage, 79%, and fewer are convinced, but over 50% agree that they reduce costs. So now I'm going to show you results from modeling the first outcome variable for not submitting. So we're looking at factors associated with not submitting to ALERT, the first outcome variable that I talked about a minute ago. And as you can see here, even though the odds ratio for by clinic specialty is elevated, it's not significant. So clinic specialty did not seem to make a difference in terms of whether clinicians were submitting. If the practice was a solo practice or had fewer clinicians than greater than or equal to five, those clinicians were more likely not to be submitting for the solo practices, nine times more likely for the practices with fewer clinicians, about three times more likely not to be submitting. In terms of whether they were willing to give the all indicated shots, in this case, not willing to give the indicated shots, that was not a statistically significant factor for not submitting. However, the big news on this slide is the bottom row where we're looking at VFC participation. If the clinician was not participating in VFC, they were highly likely not to, like 80 times more likely, if you trust the odds ratio estimate, not to be submitting to ALERT. If they didn't know, they were also more likely, if they didn't know whether they were participating with VFC, they were also more likely not to be submitting. This was actually interesting because controlling for all the variables that we just saw, we asked a question about the percent patients with private insurance. And the higher the percentage of private insurance, 26% or more, the more likely the clinician was not submitting to ALERT. And it really didn't make that much difference between the breakouts, the 26 to 50% or the over 50% in private with of patients in private insurance. Having controlled for that, percent patients with Medicaid insurance didn't make a difference. Years in practicing in the community also did not make a difference. You can see I left it in the model, but it was not associated with submitting or not submitting to ALERT, as you can see here, with the odds ratios, the confidence intervals, including one here. However, if the clinician also said that the county health department vaccinates children in their community, they were less likely to not submit or more likely to be submitting to ALERT. And if they agreed that they were reluctant, they were often reluctant to incorporate new vaccinations, they were about four times more likely not to be submitting to ALERT. And finally, whether they had a medical electronic medical record system, that did not make a difference in terms of whether they were participating in submitting data. Now we're going to look at the model from the second outcome variable, and that's accessing, not accessing ALERT, and look at some of the same variables. And in this case, clinic specialty did make a difference. Those practicing family medicine or general practice were eight times more likely not to be accessing ALERT. In terms of the number of clinicians, in the practice, even though the odds ratios are kind of elevated, they were not statistically significant, so that was not a factor, as it was in the last model that we looked at. in terms of whether they were not, if they were not willing to give all shots, they were also not accessing alert, about 3.6 times more likely not to be accessing. And again, we see at the bottom of the slide, not participating in VFC or not knowing whether they were participating in VFC, their practice was participating, was also a factor associated with not accessing alert. This is interesting because we didn't see any relationship with the time practicing in the community for submitting data to alert. However, time those who were practicing less than or equal to 5 years in that community or greater than or equal to 11 years were less likely to not be accessing alert or more likely to be accessing alert. So they were using the system, and that was statistically significant. And again, similar to what we saw in the last model, those who acknowledged that kids in their community were also receiving vaccinations by the county health departments, they were also less likely to not submit or more likely to be submitting, to be accessing alert. And whether they, what they thought about incorporating new vaccinations did not make a difference in terms of accessing the system. There was some borderline significance about their attitudes with the association of their attitudes about computerized immunization systems and not accessing alert. For example, here we see if they disagreed with the statement that computerized systems increased immunization coverage, they were borderline more likely not to be accessing alert, and likewise for the one below. Using whether they had electronic medical record in system in their practice didn't really make a difference about whether they were participating, in this case, accessing alert. So let me just briefly summarize that, and then I'll show you some of the qualitative information. VFC is strongly associated with participation, although the odds ratios, for those of you who are epidemiologists, are likely to be higher than the underlying relative risk measures. But the association is very, very strong. While not requiring alert participation, the VFC program in our state does bundle VFC and alert participation by promoting alert as a value added for both the immunization practice improvement of the practice and also for meeting VFC accountability report requirements. And that seems to be helping. Factors related to decisions to participate in VFC might also be important to alert participation. It looks like there's opportunities to work with private insurance payers to increase incentives to track immunizations with alert by leveraging alert use for quality improvement, such as some of the work that we do with our Oregon AFIX project with Medicaid health plans. Clinicians in smaller clinics may have less capacity to use alert and may need more help to participate. Newer clinicians in communities may be more technically apt or interested in using alert, and longer serving clinicians may be in more established clinics that may be able to use alert. EMRs, even though they weren't associated with participation, may likely facilitate participation once the value of using alert is recognized and the decision is made. So let's talk about what we learned from some of the qualitative information that we got from the 11 practices. Alert was generally perceived as a low or moderate burden. I think most of the practices were using alert. Alert was part of the immunization safety net toolkit. And knowledge and usage of alert varied widely. We identified communication issues that may remain about alert, and here's one example. Here's a quote from a county health officer in one of the communities, and I'll just read the yellow part. "We would make a printed copy and give it to them, and we've kind of backed away from that now because they have access to alert." Then later on, "Sometimes they still do call and say, so-and-so's here, what have they had, and we're gracious enough to give them the information instead of saying, well, did you check alert?" clinician said, nope, the only time there's communication is when they show up in our office and we call over there. There's no communication between the health department telling us that our kids are over there getting immunized. If they were seeing kids and asked families to say, you know, who's your primary provider, and send records just automatically, that would be hugely helpful. So a little bit of a disconnect there. Technology isn't always the answer here. We also identified issues around verification, especially since the vaccine schedule is so complicated and there's challenges in using parent recall. Here's a quote. So we double-checked. This is one of the clinicians or staff people. So we double-check because we do find discrepancies, and then sometimes the patient will bring their immunization record in, and it's completely different. So it's like eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you know, and I mean we have to double-check. Another quote on verification, we access alert if we do not have a shot record and we know that the kid is from the state, or if there's a question on any of the shot records, any of the documentation, we access alert just to check and see what the state has, because some of our kids like go back and forth to the health department. I use it a lot. It does have errors. I do not believe it was 100%, but it is helpful. And one of the last things on feasibility of using alert. Most practices indicate that it's really not that feasible to use it during other than well child visits. It's something we want to explore a little bit more. And here's a quote. If it's a well child exam, that is one of the first things we do is we'll go print it alert, pull it up, and give it to the provider before they go in so they can compare that with whatever the parents have. So a little discussion, then I'll summarize or conclude. The qualitative information implies that alert participation alone may not be sufficient to be helpful. In fact, some practices use alert in addition to other immunization tracking methods. Communication and coordination about clients between private health department clinics may still be needed above and beyond alert use, and figuring out how to do that is going to be a challenge. Whether clinician perceptions that alert use needs to be paired with other methods also serve as a barrier for alert participation remains a question. We really don't know at this stage. Both participating and non-participating practices may benefit from more information about alert use best practices, including uses for client reminder and recall. So in conclusion, there's evidence that VFC participation influences alert participation, and that provides some support for what we've been doing in terms of bundling the services when we promote VFC and alert. For some clinics to benefit from using alert, alternatives that address clinic capacity and feasibility limitations may be needed. Working with private insurance plans may also be beneficial. And identifying and sharing best practice uses for alert may further help engage clinics and clinicians. Ongoing alert use may depend on clinics continuing to receive and recognizing the value-added services that the system offers. Thank you very much.